But then, Fett wouldn't have taken a contract from this low down the food chain. Senators, crime lords, and the wealthy who could afford him knew his armor. Barkeeps tended not to.
"Time we shared some reminiscences about my wayward kin," said Fett,
tapping his forefinger impatiently against the trigger guard of his blaster.
"I'm not as careful as him. My name's Fett."
The barkeeper's face drained of what blood there was left in it.
"It was a while ago."
"Mandalorian in gray armor with gray gloves, called Skirata."
"Okay, he killed a guy here. A lot of damage, a lot of attention from security, too."
The barkeeper stared at Myrtanal, and he was evidently piecing things together.
"Yeah, you were with him, weren't you?"
"Not for long," said Myrta. She'd moved out of the clone's way fast, into a different cantina, in fact. "Who did he kill?"
"Gang boss called Cherit. It made the local hollow news, even."
"What do you know about Cherit that didn't make the news?"
"Nothing."
"I realize a blow to the face can affect the memory."
Fett still hadn't lowered his blaster.
"Try again."
Okay. Cherit's outfit supplied Rakix, Telek, and Twi'lek girls to some minor Kuati knobs. He was doing his deals here for a while. Maybe he was muscling in on your relative's turf."
"Doesn't sound like our line of work."
Fett stood facing the man for a long, long time. The barkeeper looked like he was gasping for something else to say to fill the silence. Eventually, Fett leaned his blaster against his shoulder, muzzle up in the safety position, and seemed appeased.
"If you see him again, tell him little Bobo wants to see him about a job."
"How's he gonna get in touch with you?"
"Mandalore, right turn off the Hylian Way. Can't miss it."
"Okay.
And where does Cherit's gang hang out now?"
The barkeeper turned to the shelves behind him and fumbled frantically in a pile of flimsy sheets.
"Don't tell Fraig I gave you this."
It was a napkin embossed with a logo that said, "The Tekshar Falls Casino."
"You'll find Fraig there most afternoons, at the Sabacc tables. Kuat City. Fraig took over from Cherit."
Jason Solo's office, GAG headquarters, Coruscant.
There was a voice in Jason's head, and he never knew whose it was. At times it was clearly Vergere, clearly a memory. But at others he wasn't sure if it was his own thoughts, or Lumaya's suggestion surfacing from his subconscious, or something else altogether. There were times when he even thought it was his conscience. It was his conscience now. He was sure of it. All he could see was his daughter, Alana.
"So you're not thinking about Tenel Ka, then?"
Whatever act he had to perform to become a full Sith Lord, it would be extreme. It had to be harder than killing a fellow Jedi. Harder even than herding Corellians into camps, or turning on his own parents and sister, or subverting democracy. It had to be the most painful decision he'd ever taken.
"I just can't kill my little girl."
"It's not them," he said.
"It has to be Ben."
And then he was back in his office, horribly aware, looking up at a bewildered Corporal Akoff. There was a cup of caff on the desk in front of him, and he hadn't seen anyone put it there.
"Lieutenant Skywalker hasn't reported for duty yet, sir."
Lakoff, grandson of the officer who had faithfully served Lord Vader, had a scrubbed, freckled cheerfulness that prevented him from looking menacing, even in black GAG armor with a BT-25 blaster.
"Can I help?"
Jason felt his face burn.
"Apologies, Corporal. I was thinking aloud." "That's okay, sir. I thought you were doing some of that Jedi stuff. Communing?"
Jason had to think for a moment. "Melding?"
"That's the stuff."
"I think I need more calf before I try that today. Thank you."
"Did you get Admiral Nyathal's message about Kit, sir?"
"What's that?" Jason checked his datapad and assorted comlinks. Bureaucracy didn't come easily to him. He'd make sure he had the best administrators when he...
"When I what?" "When I rule as a Sith Lord."
The idea was 90% sobering, 9% inappropriately exciting, and 1% repellent. If he could have identified the source of the revulsion,
a distaste for power, an old Jedi taboo, plain ignorance, he would have listened to it. But the voice wasn't loud enough. It was his small fears, his reluctance to accept responsibility, and that was something he had to ignore.
"She says some of the frontline units are having problems getting the kit they need," Lakoff said. "Annoying stuff. Specialist ordnance, comlink parts, plus some seriously non-negotiable items like medical supplies, too. They're also complaining that the cannon maintenance packs aren't up to standard, and they've had some malfunctions."
Lakoff raised his eyebrows.
"We're starting to find problems requiring what we need, too, sir."
That got Jason's attention. "This is the richest and most technically advanced planet in the galaxy, and we can't keep our forces adequately supplied in a war?"
Lakoff gave Jason a significant nod that directed him to his holoscreen.
"I think the Admiral put it a little more emphatically, but that's her general reaction as well."
"Is there a reason for this?"
"Procurement and supply seem to be dragging their feet, sir."
"Time I undrag them," Jason said. He hit the key to the comlink and opened the line to procurement. "I'm sure it's fixable."
"If you'd like me to talk to them, sir..."
"I think they need a full colonel to motivate them, Lakoff. But I'm grateful for your offer." Jason suddenly felt it was the most pressing task on his list. He and Niathal expected a lot from the armed forces, and it wasn't too much to expect the military bureaucracy to back them up.
"I'll get things moving. Find Captain Shivu for me, will you?"
"He's out on surveillance, sir. Intercepted some nasty ordnance, so he's out with Sergeant Warut, watching a drop-off point."
Shivu was hands-on. He didn't seem to be as enthusiastic about the GAG's role as he had been a few weeks earlier. But he did his job and led from the front. There was nothing more Jason could ask of an officer.
"Okay, I'll catch up with him when he's relieved."
The Skywalker's apartment, Coruscant.
Luke looked at his hands, right, then left. One was prosthetic, and one was flesh. And it had been touched by someone he was beginning to think of as his nemesis, Lumaya. In the middle of a battle, he'd had the chance to kill her, and they'd ended up touching hands in a gesture that between normal people might have been considered reconciliation. "I said I didn't want to kill her." Luke Skywalker had never wanted to kill anyone. Luke made a few idle practice passes with the Shoto and tried to visualize what might happen if he ran into Lumaya again. The doors to the apartment opened, and he heard Mara and Ben talking. Relief flooded him. He laid the Shoto on the table, and every rehearsed line of warning and disapproval vanished, replaced by a simple need to grab his only son and crush him in a hug. Ben rooted to the spot and submitted to it. Mara gave Luke a warning with a raised eyebrow, but he wasn't planning to scold Ben.
"I'm glad you're safe," Luke said. "But if anything I did made you go off like that, we need to talk about it."
Ben looked at Mara as if seeking a cue to explain.
"I was working. I was on a mission, that's all."
"Jason, you liar. You said he resented the fact that I stopped him being your apprentice. Only Jason could send him on a mission."
Luke considered casually asking Ben who'd sent him, but he knew anyway, and he didn't want to descend to tricking his own son into giving him information or putting him on the spot about Jason.
"Comlink silence?" he asked.
"Yes, Dad. Sorry."
Ben might have been surprised by the hug, but he hadn't recoiled either.
"I can't discuss it. You understand, don't you?"
"Of course I do, son. And I bet I know who told you not to. I really hoped you weren't going to stay in the GAG.
I'm good at that kind of work."
"I know.
I can't be a nice little Academy Jedi, Dad. I have to see this through."
"I understand, Ben. I do. Just look out for Lumaya," Luke said.
"You told him, Mara?"
"I told him."
"So are you going to stay for something to eat, son?" he asked, feeling Mara's gaze thaw a little.
"I'd like that," said Ben.
It was hard to have a family conversation over a meal without mentioning the war. Ben wanted to know how Han and Leia were doing. Mara shunted vegetables around her plate as if trying to sweep them under a carpet.
"Things aren't too good between Jason and your aunt and uncle at the moment, sweetheart,"
she said.
But whatever he tells you, they still care about him and want him to be okay.
It's not personal, Ben said.
Hey, I tried to arrest Uncle Han because it was my job. I didn't mean him any harm.
Luke thought about Jason's haste to abandon his parents during the attack on the resort satellite. He couldn't see Ben doing the same thing. If he could, he didn't want to see it.
Dad, was the Empire really a reign of terror?
Just a bit.
I know you and Uncle Han and Aunt Leia had a rough time of it, but what about ordinary people?
Mara chewed with slow deliberation, her gaze in slight defocus on a point in the mid-distance.
You might want to ask Alderaan. No, wait. It's gone, isn't it? Oops. That's what happened to ordinary people, and I know better than most.
But most people didn't really notice, did they?
Ben seemed to be fixed on course.
Their lives went on as before. Maybe a few people who were political got a midnight visit from a few Stormies, but most folks got on with their lives, right?
Right, Mara conceded. But living in fear isn't living at all.
It's better than dead.
You think the Empire was okay, Ben? Luke asked.
I don't know. It just seems that a handful of people can think they have the duty, the right to change things for everybody else. It's a big decision, rebellion, isn't it?
But most decisions that affect trillions of beings get made by a few people.
Luke and Mara looked at each other discreetly, and then at Ben. He'd acquired political curiosity somewhere along the line. Whatever mission Jason had sent him on, and he had, Luke was certain, it had made the boy think. Or maybe Luke was just losing touch with the fact that his kid was a young man now, and changing fast. When he left, though, Mara still helped him on with his jacket. Luke almost expected her to ask him if he was brushing his teeth every day. But being Mara, she did her maternal fretting in more pragmatic ways, and pressed a matte gray object into Ben's hand.
"Humor me," she said, and kissed his forehead. "Carry this. You never know."
Ben stared into his palm.
"Wow!"
"That," she said, "was the best vibroblade the Empire could buy. It saved me more than once. A lightsaber is great, but a lightsaber and a vibroblade is even better."
"Plus a blaster," Ben said. He grinned. "That's better still. The triple whammy."
"That's my boy." After Ben had left, Mara cleared the plates.
"When did we produce a communally minded political analyst?"
"Too many Gorog buddies, maybe."
"Does that look like an out-of-control, screwed-up boy to you?"
"No," Luke said. "But it's not Jason's influence that's making a man of him, even if he's the only one who seems to be able to handle Ben."
"Luke, we still have to do something."
"Oh, now we have to do something?
What happened to leave him with Jason? He's good for the boy."
Luke almost had to bite his lip to avoid saying that he told her so, which he'd always thought was the mark of someone who wasn't looking for a solution to the problem, just points to score. "Besides, he doesn't seem to be getting corrupted by what's happening. Maybe he is that good man on the inside. Maybe you were right to make him let our kid join the secret police."
"I meant about Lumaya."
Mara had a way of bracing her shoulders that said she knew she'd made a big mistake, but he didn't have to rub her nose in it.
"Okay, I've changed my mind. Jason's gone bad. My fault we've wasted a few months placating Ben. Satisfied? Now what about the root cause of this?"
"We haven't picked up her trail again."
"And then what happens when we do?"
Mara smacked the plates down on the counter so hard they rattled.
"What are you going to do? Hold her hand again? Because the poor old girl doesn't mean any harm? Lumaya? Queen of the Stanging Sith?"
"There really was no ill intent in her." Mara rolled her eyes.
"Of course there wasn't. She doesn't want to kill you. She wants to kill our son."
She grabbed Luke's face in both hands and made him look into her eyes.
"Luke, you could have killed her. Cut her in two. Finish the job. But you didn't."
Luke felt inexplicably ashamed.
"I couldn't." "I know. We come from different schools of justice, don't we?" "Sweetheart, she's not your father, Luke. There's nothing good left in her to redeem. She's a thread that needs to be taken out, and that's what I'm trained to do, and you're not. Forget this take-her-alive-if-possible garbage. The only way anyone's taking her is dead. You're telling me you're going after her? You might tag along if you could be trusted not to go soft on her.
Mara let him go and looked embarrassed. Her cheeks were flushed.
You can have Alima. She needs a serious attitude readjustment with a lightsaber, too. It's not as if we haven't got enough kill-crazy stalkers to go around.
Let's see how much Jason perks up with Lumaya gone, he said.
Wait, Luke thought. Did I just bless an assassination? And with Alima out of the way, then Leia and Han can come back into the fold, and we can face this war as a family again.
Mara patted his cheek with a regretful smile, and set a droid on cleaning the dishes. She spent the rest of the afternoon assembling and checking an array of weapons that definitely didn't come from a civilized age.
I never knew you had one of those, he said, pointing to a blaster that had the wide-mouthed muzzle of a grenade launcher.
How are you planning to use it?
With a flechette cartridge. Let's see her try a light whip on that.
Do you want to take my Shoto?
You offering?
Good luck token, maybe.
Under the ribcage token, more like. Unless that's all Durasteel, too.
This was his wife. Sometimes he caught a glimpse of the woman she once had been. And she was a stranger for a second or two.
How are you going to track her?
She hides very well.
I can hunt very well.
Mara took the Shoto hilt and spun it like a blade.
Just keep me informed where you are, okay?
You'll know. Mara gave him her best, I know what I'm doing, grin.
And who better to go after a former Emperor's hand than another one?
You did that before.
And that was before I had a son to worry about.
The grin faded.
I'm much more dangerous now I have a cub to protect.
Tekshaw Falls Casino, Kuat City, Kuat.
What happened to the clones?
Myrta asked. Kuat City stank of credits. Fett had never been able to understand how an industrial society whose wealth was built on heavy engineering still had an ancient aristocracy. Funny place. Anachronistic. Ahead of him, the smarter part of Kuat City glittered. Elegant towers and spires that seemed a refined echo of the industrial skyline of cranes in the orbital shipyards.
Cannon fodder, he said, answering Myrta at last.
He brought the speeder bike to a halt by an arcade of smart shops.
They died.
Not the one I saw. He said some left the army.
The only way out was death or destruction.
None of them retired?
Depends on what you mean by retired.
The Tekshar Falls was one of those feats of architectural near impossibility at which the Kuati excelled. Other establishments in the galaxy had impressive water features, but the Tekshar was a waterfall, a raging, hammering torrent from a river diverted at vast expense into the entertainment center of the city. The casino was set within the waterfall itself, part construction, part natural stone, with turrets jutting through the water like tree fungi. To get to the entrance, gamblers had to walk through water plummeting 500 meters.
Pity. I've just had my hair done,
Myrta said, solidly encased in armor from head to toe.
Is this how they stop the riffraff from coming in?
We are the riffraff, said Fett. And we're going in.
He walked straight across the bridge at the wall of roaring water and churning white foam. The falls parted like a curtain to create a wide portal. Behind the casino was a vividly lit and completely dry haven.
Very impressive, said Myrta.
It was a nice trick played by automated force fields triggered by a motion sensor. But it was, as he often thought, all about presentation. A little theater. It always helped.
Keep up, he said.
The lobby of the casino was a study in opulence, as if someone had taken a bet on how many credits they could spend on each square meter. The lobby parted into two sections, one leading to the restaurant and the other to the gaming tables. Fett consulted his investment portfolio via his HUD. He noted Tyrule Construction Holdings.
Let's not do too much damage, he said. I think I have shares in this place.
There was a steward on the front desk and a few very large assistants. Humans, Trandoshans, and Gran, walking in slow, considered circles around the thick purple carpet that dragged at Fett's boots like tar. The steward was scanning a screen in his desk, probably matching Fett's image to the database of guests he needed to recognize for one reason or another. Judging by his sudden flinch, he'd found Fett.
"Do you have proof of identity, sir?"
Fett touched his blaster.
"This used to do nicely."
The steward, human male, utterly ugly, was doing a very good job of not wetting his pants. Fett had to hand it to him.
"Ah, haven't seen you here in a long time, sir."
"I've come to visit someone."
Fett indicated Myrta with a thumb gesture.
"With my associate."
"Will that seeing require repairs afterward?"
Fett flicked a very large denomination credit chip onto the desk.
"Keep the change, in case it does. Where's Vraig?"
Credits talked. Blasters talked too, but credits could whisper menacingly every bit as well.
"He's hosting a private sabacc game in his suite on the 30th floor, sir."
The steward smiled valiantly and snapped his fingers at the hired help.
"I'll let him know you're on the way up."
The Natalie-attired Trandoshan rushed to his summons, looking like he'd picked the wrong outfit for a costume party.
"Take the, President of Mandalore up to Master Fraig's suite. All drinks on the house."
So they didn't quite grasp what being Mandalore meant. That was okay, because Fett didn't either. Myrta stifled laughter, but only Fett heard it. He switched to the helmet comlink with a blink.
"So you do have shares here, Baba Weir,"
she said.
"Depending on how many guests Fraig's got, I might need your help. Try not to kill them, unless they ask for it."
"Yes, sir, Mr. President."
"I liked you better without a sense of humor."
Fett followed the Trandoshan. The turbolift doors opened onto a floor of the same thick purple carpet as the lobby, with small salons leading off it. Gaming tables rattled, clicked, and flashed with lives ruined and fortunes lost. The Trandoshan led them along a corridor to an imposing set of gilded doors, then beat a lumbering retreat. The doors parted, and Fett found himself visor to nose with a Hamadryas, who didn't seem to know how to blink. Behind him, a group of six splendidly dressed gamblers, three human males, two females, and a Weequay, sat around a gilt-framed sabacc table with Fraig. There were two more heavies standing by the kitchen doors, probably on drinks patrol.
"Master Fett," said Fraig, not looking up from the table. "How good to meet you."
Fraig had a great hand. Fett could see it embedded in the table's display as he loomed over him. It was a pity to interrupt. His guests were trying to concentrate on the sabacc game. But it was hard to give the cards full attention when there were two bounty hunters paying an unexpected visit. They all found reasons to go to the kitchen to top up their drinks, while the Hamadryas watched silently, one hand now on his holster.
"Got a few questions for you about your predecessor."
"Depends what you want to know."
Fraig was as well spoken as his hair was coiffed.
"I do hope you haven't been sent by Cherit's associates to express their displeasure."
"I'm not going to kill you. If I did that, then you wouldn't be able to tell me things. And I want you to tell me things. I'm a curious man."
The Hamadryas on the door already had his blaster visible on his belt, but Myrta had him covered. Fett could see from their HUD comlink connection that she was watching him, the helmet sensors responding to her eye movements. Fraig shrugged.
"What exactly do you want me to tell you?"
"The Mandalorian who killed Cherit. I need to find him."
Fraig had the kind of smile that spread like a crack in ice.
"I've been asked some subtle questions, but that's a good one. I assure you I didn't order Cherit's death."
"I don't care if you sent a wreath and took care of his widow. Do you know where I can find the man who killed him?"
"Shall we step outside onto the balcony?"
Fraig gestured and picked up his drink.
"It's a sensitive matter to discuss in front of my guests."
"Suit yourself," said Fett.
and decided instantly where he was prepared to be maneuvered.
Step outside. Right.
Mirta stood guard at the open doors, but the Hamadryas bodyguard tried to move her out of the way. He made the mistake of putting his hand on her back, and a little too low at that. She simply raised her clenched fist to shoulder height and ejected her gauntlet vibroblade.
Touch me again, Chakar, and I'll ram this into your carotid artery.
I haven't got one.
Then I'll have to keep stabbing you until I find somewhere else that bleeds copiously.
Frigg intervened.
Sirku, let's not upset the lady, shall we? Let her wait wherever she wishes.
Frigg was making a lot of mistakes tonight for a crime boss. It was just as well. Fett always assumed the worst. Frigg might have thought that a balcony reduced Fett's options, but it didn't represent much of a problem for a man with a jetpack. Frigg didn't have one. He also lacked a fiber cord line. This wouldn't take long.
Amateurs.
Fett had to fight an urge to explain to Frigg how to do it right. Out on the balcony, Kuat City's light shimmered through a veil of rushing water in the dusk. An overhang diverted the water a couple of meters from the face of the building. Fett leaned one hand on the rail, feigning casual disinterest but actually testing the strength of the metal. He cast an eye over Frigg to estimate his weight.
Let me repeat that simple question. Tell me anything you know about the Mandalorian who whacked your predecessor.
I had nothing to do with it. Jared upset a lot of folks. Occupational hazard.
Question still stands. I'll bet your organization was keen to find out, too.
We didn't know who he was. All we knew was that he had a grudge about a certain Twi'lek clan. We do business with Twi'leks in the entertainment industry.
I'll bet.
Frigg meant Twi'lek girls.
What kind of a grudge?
He didn't think we were treating them properly. We lost a couple of very popular entertainers, thanks to him.
Frigg was lying scum. Time. He didn't have time for this.
Seen him since?
No.
Wanna tell me who the Twi'leks were?
Why do you want this man so badly? It has to be something big for you to be hunting him.
Frigg examined his manicured nails.
Or perhaps some of my associates regret Cheret's passing, so they've hired you to come after me.
Not for hire right now.
Fett could never understand why they didn't listen. They never heard what he said. He played it straight, and they always looked for a second meaning.
I want the Mondo in one piece. I need him to do something for me.
Frigg had missed his chance. Fett switched to the helmet comlink and got Myrta's attention, which was fixed on him, and the Hamadryas anyway.
I'm just going to help our friend remember a few things. Useful stuff, fiber cord.
Fett shot out the line in a loop from his backpack and whipped it around Frigg, jammed the grappling hook between the bars, and shoved him over the railing. It took 2 seconds. Frigg screamed, clinging to the top rail, but a good hard whack on the knuckles with the butt of the blaster made the scumbag let go. Frigg plummeted, and Fett braced for the inevitable thump into the rail when the rope ran out. It nearly winded him. Frigg bounced and twisted in the line's strangling grip, still shrieking. Fett kept a few meters of the line secured in reserve in the winch assembly. Mirta was taking good care of the Hamadryas. She'd half-closed the transparisteel doors on him, but the bodyguard wedged his body in the gap and tried to get a blaster shot through the opening. His arm was trapped. Fett watched, impressed, as Mirta headbutted the guard a second time, shoved the vibroblade into his thigh, and forced him, shrieking in pain, nice touch, back through the doors so that they crashed shut. Then she fired a few rounds into the controls. Fett peered over the side. Frigg was twisting helplessly like a DV hooked on a fishing line, making gasping sounds. The line was tight around his waist and chest. He was dangling 15 meters below the rail.
Don't struggle and think calm thoughts,
Fett called.
It helps you remember, and it'll stop you from slipping out of the loop.
You're crazy! I'll have your throat cut for this!
You're on the end of a line. I'm on solid ground. Think about it.
You're a dead man!
Perceptive to the last.
Give me names, Vermin.
I tell you, I didn't pay the Mondo. I'm glad he whacked Cherit, but I never paid him to do it.
Try again.
Frag's voice was almost drowned out by the roar of the waterfall behind him.
The Twi'lek were from some family called Himar.
Good start.
Fett paid out another meter of line with a jolt. Frag shrieked as he slipped farther toward the permacrete stone and raging water 100 meters below.
Is that helping? Memory often needs a trigger.
Himar. Any Mondo who pitched in hard to play the hero for a couple of dancers would be known in the Twi'lek community. It didn't happen that often. Nobody else cared what happened to Twi'lek girls. Fett had his lead. He'd have a contact somewhere, and if he didn't, Baveen would. Baveen wouldn't press him to find out why.
Anything else you want to get off your chest?
I don't know the guy, Fett, but I know you're going to regret this.
Fett could hear the dull, rhythmic thuds of Frag's bodyguards trying to smash the doors apart.
If I find you've given me a load of garbage, I'll be back to finish the job.
He braced his boot on the bottom rail and began winching in the gangster. Myrta stood next to him with her blaster trained on the doors.
You're going soft. Why are you reeling him back in?
I want the Fibercord back. It's my favorite ultrafine.
When you get him on the balcony, I'll tranquilize him.
Then back to Slave One.
You're lucky we've got jets.
I wouldn't have come up here if I hadn't.
Fett heaved Frag over the rail in a tangled heap, and Myrta delivered a roundhouse punch that laid the man out. If that was her tranquilizer treatment, she was a born medic.
Time to go.
Myrta shot off at an awkward angle and crashed through the sheet of water ahead of him. There was no force field up here to part the falls. When Fett looked down, he could see speeders crisscrossing the plaza on either side of the boulevard. He needed to land and find a speeder bike. Jets were great for fast exits, but the flame made both of them conspicuous targets in the night sky. The speeder was still where he'd left it, primed with a detonator and hidden in bushes on the edge of a park. He set off for the landing strip at top speed, down freight lanes that had the lightest traffic. Fett took one hand off the bars and activated Slave One's remote controls. Her drives would be primed. He would drop the speeder into the cargo hold and get off this planet inside a minute. In his HUD display, he was already scanning databases for that Twi'lek family name. Slave One was standing between two battered freighters, looking nothing special to anyone who didn't know the ship. Just an old fire spray idling her drives. Fett grounded the speeder bike and ran for the ship. Fett left Myrta to dock the speeder in the hold and climbed up into the cockpit.
Come on, girl. What's keeping you?
He tapped the console switches, and Slave One whined up to full power, a faint tremor passing through her airframe.
It said safe. It said home.
It was the most reassuring sound he knew.
You've got 20 seconds before I close the cargo hatch.
There was no answer. And just as that fact registered, Slave One's entry warning light flashed. There was someone else on board. The systems didn't recognize them.
Myrta? Myrta!
The internal security cam showed nothing but the speeder. Fett grabbed his blaster and went aft to check. Even through the helmet filter, he could smell a strong, oily stench that he hadn't smelled in years. He couldn't quite place it, but he knew it. The speeder was stowed. The hatch was open. Fett stood to one side of the hatch. His sensor showed him two shapes on the ramp. One humanoid and one animal, whose form wasn't clearly defined. He counted to three and came out, blaster and flamethrower aimed. Myrta, minus helmet, was in the tight headlock of a Mandalorian in gray armor, and a large, gold-furred animal had its huge jaws locked around her leg, trailing a curtain of drool. It wasn't attacking, it was frozen, pinning her down, and stinking. And she didn't look scared, just embarrassed. Fett stared down the barrel of a custom Verpine rifle aimed one-handed.
Well, well,
said the Mandalorian in gray armor. He really did have a very fine pair of gray leather gloves.
It's Lil Bobica. Last time we met, my brother was shoving your head down the freshers to teach you some manners. What do you want me for, Nervod?
Mm-hmm.
Galactic Alliance Guard Briefing Room, GAG Headquarters, Coruscant.
Ben was glad to be back among people he trusted. The sea of black uniforms might have been a sinister sight to some people, but to him, they felt like a brotherhood, like family. He was in that rare position of being young enough to be treated like one of the troopers, despite his officer status, and he liked that. The sense of camaraderie, and the knowledge that everyone watched everyone else's back was both comforting and thrilling. He settled into a seat on the end of a row in the briefing room. A trooper called Almok nudged him. Captain Lon Shivu strode onto the dais at the front of the room, looking as committed as ever. But Ben felt the reluctance and misgivings in him. He could sense it in a few of the other troopers, too, generally the ones who'd been in the CSF. Jason followed Shivu and got instant, undivided attention. "Brief for the next 48 hours, ladies and gentlemen," said Jason. "We're moving into a different phase. The priority now is to look for professionals, Confederation intelligence agents. Now, normally, we'd leave that to our colleagues in Alliance Intel. But seeing as we've got all their best operatives..." Applause and laughter interrupted him. He paused with a big grin and picked up again. "Seeing as we got the pick of the litter, we'll be helping them out. We'll also be providing close protection for Chief Omos and key ministers to relieve CSF, and monitoring for them. Results of interrogation suggest we might be looking at more targeted and professional assassination attempts, as in government agents, not just disgruntled amateurs and bounty hunters." A hand was raised at the front. Ben couldn't see who it was.
"What's monitoring in this context, sir?"
Jason flashed a holo image onto the screen behind him. It showed a diagram of the various routes by which GA ministers could be reached, physically or virtually. Offices, home addresses, private clubs, routes to the Senate, comlinks.
"Like this," he said.
"Are we allowed to tap Senator's comlink, sir?" asked Shivu.
"Under the Emergency Measures Act, we are authorized to carry out any surveillance to prevent acts of violence against ministers of state and visiting allies." Shivu's face was unreadable, but Ben felt a sharp unhappiness in him. Now there was a guy who knew how to conceal what he was thinking. Tapping Senator's comlinks didn't seem to bother anyone else at the briefing. Ben couldn't see the problem either. It made sense, for their own protection. The briefing broke up. Ben hung back to talk to Jason, getting a few joking comments about his recent absence as the troopers filed out, and giving as good as he got. He felt a sudden pressure at the back of his head, and when he looked around, Jason was watching him from the side of the dais, smiling slightly. "They like you," he said. "That's good for an officer, as long as you're liked for the right reasons."
"Isn't it important to be respected instead?"
"What's respect, Ben?" Ben pondered the question, hearing a subtle test in it.
"Thinking that a person does something right and that they do it better than you, and so you feel positive toward them."
"Excellent."
"That's not the same as being liked, though, is it?"
"Not at all. We can respect those we dislike," Jason said. "The way to be liked by your men is this, that they believe that you would never spend their lives cheaply, that their welfare comes first, and that you wouldn't ask them to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself, to share their trials and triumphs without being one of them. And they know that's how it has to be, because they know an officer has to make decisions that cost lives, and that's something you can only do if you remain sufficiently separate." Ben hadn't lost a trooper from 967th Commando yet. In fact, they had no fatalities or even serious injuries. They led charmed lives as far as the rest of the military were concerned. He had no idea how he'd feel if he had to put them in a position where deaths were inevitable. Jason seemed to read his mind again. "Until you can make those decisions, you're not safe to lead."
"But it's easier if you're prepared to die yourself, right? Because if you're willing to make the same sacrifice, that's the one thing that matters."
Jason leaned close to him. "It inspires. It's the ultimate act of honesty with your troops."
"I don't know which way I'll jump when the time comes," Ben said. "Nobody does. But I'll try to do what's right for the majority."
Jason's smile was utterly luminous for a moment.
but then it faded as if he'd recalled something awful. His force presence vanished for a few seconds and then returned.
That was weird, Ben thought.
Jason was standing right next to him, so what was he hiding from?
Can you teach me to do that?
Ben asked.
Hide in the force?
Jason seemed shaken. Why?
Because Lumaya is trying to kill me. I thought it might come in handy. Mom says she's got evidence that I killed... that Lumaya thinks I killed her daughter. I don't remember a thing about what happened on that asteroid, Jason, but maybe it doesn't matter, because Lumaya believes it. And I bet she was behind what happened on Xyost.
Jason's face was carefully blank. Ben couldn't tell what he was thinking now, not even from the Force. Yes, why not? Jason said. His voice was softer, almost hesitant. Don't you worry about Lumaya. She's not up to killing you.
When can we start?
It's very simple.
Yeah,
Ben said dubiously. No, it is. The principle is simple. It's the practice that's hard. It might take you years to master it. Jason motioned him to sit down on the floor. Come on, meditation position. Ben sat down cross-legged and closed his eyes automatically, taking deeper and slower breaths, until he reached the stage where the world beyond him seemed distant, and he was hyper-aware of his own body, even the movement of blood in his veins. Jason's voice seemed to be coming from another time and place. You're contained. The world can't touch you.
Yes.
Now, break the shell. Break the container. Jason's tone was even and soothing. See the world in its component atoms. See yourself as atoms too. Find the line where you end and the world begins. Ben visualized the room around him and the air in it. It became a frozen snowfall of varying density. Some particles clustered, some scattered. Then he looked into himself and saw the microscopic unevenness of the surface of his skin and the overlapping plates of keratin in his hair. And then beyond that to where he was just like the room around him, a snowstorm of molecules. Some of the room was within him as oxygen and dust, and some of him was in the room as fragments of skin and droplets of water. There was no line. There was no edge that divided Ben Skywalker from the room, or from Coruscant, or from the galaxy. He merged with it all, and it merged with him. There was nothing solid, just a warm, drifting sea of molecules, some of which assembled loosely and long enough to be Ben Skywalker. So you can do it. Jason's voice drifted from a long way away. Ben suddenly felt as if he were dissolving and would never be whole again. Panic gripped him. He jerked his eyes open with a massive effort, like tearing open rock with his bare hands, an effort so immense that he found himself gasping for air.
Oh, wow.
Now, Jason said softly, you need to practice regularly. Ben nodded, worried about looking too enthusiastic.
I will, he said. Any orders for me, or am I just going to be listening to comlinks now?
Oh, I have a mission for you. Jason reached into his jacket and pulled out a data pad. Read this. It's the original sources of the intelligence I received, so you can judge for yourself. Ben took the data pad and studied the screen. There were transcripts of comlink conversations, and even grainy images of a meeting, taken from such an odd angle that it must have been captured by a spy droid in a very awkward location, probably on top of a cupboard. Men in expensive suits and tunics, sipping caff and talking in hushed tones. A man with well-cut dark hair, younger than Jason. Ben recognized him as Dur Gedjan.
That's the Corellian Prime Minister,
he said. That's all the intel gathered from our contacts inside the Corellian government offices. Read on. There was discussion of driving a wedge between Hapes and the Galactic Alliance. It sounded like the usual political maneuvering that always bored Ben, until he started to read reoccurring phrases, like Queen Mother,
and seeing the disadvantages of siding with the Alliance. And then there were references to removing obstacles. It all fell into place when he flicked to the next hollow image and saw discussion of appropriate bounty hunters and who might be willing to operate in the Hapen royal house. Ben might have been bored by politics, but he understood better than he imagined, and he knew he had to if he wanted to survive.
This is about Tenel Ka.
Correct.
Gedgen really did plan the attack on her then.
Correct. We finally have hard evidence, and so we can act.
What do you want me to do?
Ben asked, pretty sure what the answer would be. Assassinate Gedgen. Jason rubbed his forehead wearily. He's a piece of work, and he'll destabilize our allies. There's no negotiating with a man who routinely resorts to state-sponsored assassination like that. The Corellians need to know we can reach out and take them, too. Sober them up a bit. Way too cocky.
Isn't that what we're doing, though? How is our assassination different from theirs? Won't it just lead to more killings?
You want to do this by the book? Okay. Call Corellian Security and report Gidgen for conspiracy to murder. Oh, and for having Thrakken Sal Solo assassinated too. Even if we can't call my father in court to testify to that. Let's see how fast they arrest him.
I know.
You don't have to do it. Jason had that slightly wounded tone that said quite the opposite. But you proved you were competent at covert ops when we hit Centerpoint. And you can get a lot closer to Gedgen. A lot more easily than some big hairy commando like DeVille. You can look like a harmless teenager. Jason stared at him, head slightly on one side, with that almost smile that said he was sure Ben was going to say yes. I'll send you with good backup, Jason said. Shivu and Lakoff. Our contacts on Corellia are working out a time and place. You'll have to be ready to go at a moment's notice.
Galactic Alliance XJ-7 in neutral space between Corellia and Coruscant.
Mara wondered if she'd bother to spin Jason a line about why she needed to take an XJ-7. Look, Jason, it's like this. You've turned into a thug since Lumaya came on the scene, and the witch is trying to kill my son. So how's about I do what I do best and kill her for all our sakes? She would have loved to tell him that. But she still didn't know who Lumaya's accomplices were inside the GAG, and Jason didn't take kindly to doubts about his precious secret police. Mara tried Leia's comlink again, hopping from frequency to frequency in case she was being tracked. Old habits died hard, and she didn't want Crazy Woman 2, Alima, to get a fix on her, or Leia.
"We can't go on meeting like this,"
said Leia's voice. She laughed. And that was pretty remarkable under the circumstances. She didn't have much to laugh about.
"Do I have to give you a password?"
"I'll trust you." Mara checked her cockpit display, watching the frequency shift on the monitor in multicolored bars of light.
"You okay?"
"For a woman on the run, I'm doing great."
"I don't know where to start."
"Try, hey, did your son really abandon you to suck vacuum? Because that'd be my first question."
"I'm so sorry, Leia. I really am. But I'm going to put a stop to this. Take Mamaya out of the equation. And I think you'll see a major improvement in Jason's attitude."
"Is that where you are now?"
"I'm trying to work out how Lumaya moves around. Forget all this light whip garbage. I'm going to find her ship and finish what Luke started. They're always vulnerable in transit."
Leia's end of the link went quiet for a few moments.
"Want me to play bait?"
"Don't you think you've been through enough lately?"
"I can guarantee that Alima would show up if I asked nicely. And maybe Lumaya wouldn't be far behind."
"Tell you what, why don't I lob in Ben and make certain of it?"
"Mara."
"Sorry. I don't want to expose you to any more risk. But if I can devise a safer way of exploiting the fact that neither of those crazies can keep away from us, I'll do it."
"We're going to need to break this link soon."
"Okay, look. I have to see Jason sooner or later. Do you want me to put it to him straight? Ask him why he ran when you'd come to save him?"
"What if he tells you? And it's a reason I won't enjoy hearing."
"Your call. But I want to know anyway. seeing as Luke and I were there to help him too, and wasted our time.
All I can say is do whatever you feel you must to get Lumaya. Then we'll see about bringing Jason back into the fold.
If I find Alima, I'll save her for you.
I'd like that.
Thought you might.
You take care, Mara.
Leia's link went dead. Mara had to assume she and Han were on Corellia, and that meant Alima couldn't get at her so easily. Mara turned the XJ-7 and checked Ben's transponder again. Still on Coruscant. That didn't guarantee his safety, but at least she could pinpoint him. She zoomed her screen in on the trace, and the coordinates resolved into a grid, and then into neighborhoods and sky lanes. Ben was at GAGHQ. She could locate him accurately to within 3 meters.
He liked the vibroblade she'd given him. She felt bad not telling him it housed a long-range passive transponder, and that it had saved her more than once because she'd used it as a homing beacon. But that was just detail. It was a superb weapon, so it wasn't a lie. The tagged vibroblade ensured she knew exactly where Ben was at all times now. She had one more transponder left, and she was saving that for a rainy day. She turned her attention back to Lumaya. The last time she'd been on the resort satellite, Ben wasn't even around, but Jason was. Who was Lumaya going after, Ben or Jason? If Lumaya's presence was making Jason forget what being a Jedi was all about, then maybe Mara needed to keep tabs on Jason, too. That was easier said than done. Then, something vanished from the Force. Ben. It was like a shape flashing past her peripheral vision, and a familiar background noise stopping abruptly, leaving a dead, soundless ringing in the ears. Ben's gone. Ben had disappeared from the Force. Mara's hand was on the controls to jump to hyperspace and head back to Coruscant at top speed when the sense of her son flooded back, as if the sound had been turned on again. Her stomach rolled. Maybe it's me. He'd done it before as a little boy, scared by the last war, the one against the Yuuzhan Vong. It was uncontrolled and instinctive, but what Mara had just experienced felt like something more deliberate. When she concentrated on him, he felt fine. No, more than fine. He felt elated.
Southside Landing Strip, Kuat City.
So, said the clone. He hauled Myrta to her feet and dusted her down, and she tolerated it. What part of stay out of my way didn't you understand?
Myrta opened her mouth to give him a piece of her mind, but Fett cut in.
Nice of you to drop in, but can we continue this discussion elsewhere? Ah, the almighty Mandalore. Hanging a gang boss over a balcony in the center of town. Yeah, that's subtle.
The clone motioned the animal into the cargo bay, where it lay rumbling ominously like a distant storm.
I was looking for you.
Fett closed the hatch.
We have to go. Shut up and secure yourself for takeoff. You abducting me? Would you rather have a chat and a cup of calf while we wait for the Kuat police and all the Frag scumbags to show up? Okay, I borrowed the speeder anyway, sort of. Tell you what, drop us off on Coruscant, we'll be on our way.
The clone grabbed his helmet with both hands and lifted it off. He didn't look any less intimidating, but after a couple of seconds he broke into an unexpected grin that completely transformed him. He looked more like Fett's brother than his twin, not identical at all.
They say there's some family resemblance. But I don't see it myself.
Fett paused for a telling moment, and then stalked off to the cockpit. Myrta wasn't certain whether to land a punch on the clone or thank him for showing up.
What's your name? Jang Skirata. And you?
Myrta Gev.
Then she realized it didn't have the required impact.
Fett's granddaughter.
Jang raised his eyebrows and burst out laughing. The animal lifted its head and whined. Myrta went forward to the cockpit to strap herself in for takeoff, unhappy at the laughter still ringing behind her.
You let him ambush you,
said Fett. Myrta seethed.
I didn't pick him up on my sensors, and I didn't even see him coming at me. He flattened me before I could colleague him.
Stab.
You're learning.
And you're not.
Fett punched the controls, and Kuat dwindled to a disc beneath him.
He didn't check visually. Don't rely on the helmet tech all the time.
Hey, you didn't spot him either. That's gotta be stealth armor.
He's a null.
There was some history there. She could see that.
They were Black Ops clones. The Kaminoans attempt to improve on my dad's genome for cloning. You can see it didn't work.
She gripped the console in front of her as Fett tapped in the coordinates for Coruscant, 000, and Slave 1 jumped to hyperspace.
Course laid in. Let's go talk to him.
Jang was sitting cross-legged on the deck of the cargo bay, face to face with the animal, which was gazing into his eyes and making little whining, grumbling sounds, as if trying to get him to understand something. He seemed oblivious to its smell. They both looked around when Fett and Myrta came through the hatch.
What is he?
Myrta asked.
You asking me, or Lord Myrdalan?
Jang held his gloved fingers up in front of the animal's face, some kind of signal that produced instant attention and made it lie flat on the deck. Jang got to his feet.
He's an it. Strills are hermaphrodites. I promised Myrd's last owner I'd look after it when he passed to the Manda. Strills live a lot longer than we do.
Fett shoved his thumbs into his belt in that I'm fed up with waiting pose.
When you two finish the nature lesson...
Jang had more lines, fewer gray hairs, and a heavier build than Fett.
So why do you want me? Need a loan? You've been looking for me for weeks, because I've been hearing all kinds of people putting out the word for me. I'm dying,
Fett said. Jang chewed over the news, head slightly to one side.
Sorry to hear that. You're not the only clone who met a premature end.
Fett usually cut to the chase. Now he stood silent for a while, jaw muscles twitching. Myrta wondered if he was hurt by the rebuff. She guessed that he was working up the hardest thing he'd ever had to say. He was.
I want your help, Jang.
Jang just stared at him. The staring went on for a long time. Myrta wondered who would give in first. Then it went on a little too long.
Oh, for Fearfax's sake,
she sighed.
It's the cloning. His tissues are breaking down and he's got tumors. He needs to know what stopped you aging at double the rate, because his doctor can't help him and neither can the Kaminoans, not even Ton Wee.
Fett pursed his lips slightly.
What she said.
Jang looked Fett up and down.
You had trouble with your leg, I heard. Had to have a transplant, yes? You're very well informed. I'm still a Tepaka boy at heart. I stay in touch with events in the old country. What have I got to pay you to quit gloating and give me what I need? No offense, but you can shove your credits where your armor don't reach. Mandalore. You don't know what I need yet. I can guess. Kosai's research.
Fett gave Jang's gloves a pointed glance.
Because I know you found it. You certainly found her. There isn't any data,
Jang said. Fett didn't even blink.
You must have taken all your vitamins then, because you should be dead by now. I didn't say the research didn't exist. I'm saying that we destroyed it after we took what we needed.
Fett absorbed that slowly. Myrta's heart sank in that conflicting way it had now. Part of her desperate to find a reason to love her Babuir, and half of her wishing Leia Solo hadn't blocked her shot when she tried to kill him.
Do something to make me forgive you. Please, anything.
You could have made a fortune from it,
Fett said.
We didn't want it used again. Ever. You can't stop cloning. You never will. No, but we put a dent in the Kaminoans. That's better than nothing. I don't like Kaminoans. I can tell.
Fett glanced at Jang's fine gray gloves.
But I've worked for worse. They paid you? They bred us like animals.
Jang looked as if he'd remembered something satisfying.
So Ton Wee's still alive? I always wondered. Leave her alone, Jang. She's old now. So am I. No thanks to her. So how long have you got to live?
A year, maybe two if my luck holds.
How long before you have to hand over command?
I don't know.
The last thing Mandalore needs at the moment is a power vacuum.
Myrta saw a glimmer of hope.
So help him, Chang.